A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's pointing out something that's been staring us in the face for the past couple of years. The White House has been using Axios, and specifically Barak Ravid, as its preferred channel for leaking positions on the Iran-Israel conflict. Not the Times, not the Post, not a State Department briefing. Axios. And the theory he wants us to dig into is whether this is strategic coordination, whether it's a deliberate back channel to Israeli and Jewish audiences that bypasses the Netanyahu government's spin machine. So let's get into it. Who is Barak Ravid? How did this channel become so prominent? And is this just good sourcing or something more structured?
The pattern itself is remarkable once you start tracking it. Between October 2023 and now, June 2026, I count at least 14 major U.S. policy positions on Iran. Israel, that appeared first in Axios through Barak Ravid, often hours before any official channel acknowledged them. We're not talking about incremental updates here. These are the decisions that shape whether we go to war.
And that's just the ones we can verify.
April 2024. The White House debates internally whether to support Israeli retaliation after that wave of Iranian drone strikes. Hours after the meeting ends, Ravid publishes the exact parameters of the U.S. position. Limits on targets. No support for strikes on Iranian nuclear sites. The specificity was staggering.
Which is either the world's best sourcing or someone wanted that out there.
May 2025. Ravid reports the U.S. warning about nuclear threshold red lines, specific enrichment percentages, the administration considered unacceptable. February 2026, the leak of direct U.S. opposition to an Israeli preemptive strike on the Natanz. Each time, the timing aligns with moments when the White House wanted to signal something to someone, and the detail level is the kind of thing you don't get from a hallway whisper.
Let's establish who we're talking about. Barak Ravid, born 1980 in Israel, started at Haaretz in 2005 as a diplomatic correspondent, moved to Channel 10 News, then joined Axios in 2018 as its first Israel-based reporter. He's been embedded with Israeli defense officials for over 15 years. He's interviewed every U.S. national security advisor since 2019. And in 2024, he published a book called Trump's Peace about the Abraham Accords, interviews with Kushner Netanyahu, Mohammed bin Salman. This is not a guy who stumbled into Access.
No, he built it systematically. And here's what's interesting. His access is genuinely bilateral. He has direct lines to the White House Situation Room and the Israeli Prime Minister's office. Most correspondents in that region are strong on one side and weak on the other. Ravid is fluent in both power structures. That's rare.
The dual fluency thing matters. He's not an American journalist covering Israel. He's an Israeli journalist who understands Washington, or maybe a Washington journalist who understands Israel. The categories blur.
Which is exactly what makes him useful. But to understand why the White House chose this channel, we have to look at Axios itself. Jim VandeHei, Mike Allen, and Roy Schwartz founded it in 2016 after VandeHei left Politico. The entire model was built on what they called smart brevity, short, high-impact reporting optimized for newsletter distribution and social sharing. The business model rewards scoops that drive subscriptions and viral spread.
The incentive structure aligns perfectly with what an administration wants when it leaks. Maximum velocity, minimum friction.
Cox Media Group acquired Axios in 2022 for $525 million. By then, the model was proven. Over 1.5 million direct newsletter subscribers. A typical Ravid scoop generates more than 200,000 opens within the first hour. That's not readership, that's opens. In the first hour...
Which means the White House knows, with near certainty, that a Ravid exclusive will hit the exact audience they want within 60 minutes. DC insiders, foreign policy professionals, and critically, Israeli media elites who syndicate his reporting immediately.
Let me walk through the mechanics of how this actually works. A White House official, usually someone at the NSC level or higher, gives Ravid a specific detail. Ravid publishes on Axios. Within minutes, the story is picked up by Yinet Hayaretz Israel Hayom, translated into Hebrew, framed for an Israeli audience. Israeli journalists then cite what Axios is reporting as a signal of U.S. intent. The White House has now communicated directly with the Israeli public and elite without ever issuing an official statement.
Without the Netanyahu government getting to frame it first.
That's the key. Since 2023, Netanyahu's government has been extremely aggressive about controlling the narrative of U.S.-Israel relations, often portraying U.S. pressure as hostile, as interference, as the Biden or now Trump administration not understanding Israeli security needs. Ravid's reporting reaches Israeli audiences directly. The Prime Minister's office doesn't get to spin it before people read it.
The theory Daniel's source proposed, that this is a channel to Israeli and Jewish audiences that bypasses Netanyahu's filter, holds up pretty well when you look at the mechanics.
But let me complicate it slightly. The Israeli audience is one target. It's not the only target. These leaks are also aimed at Tehran. When Ravid reports that the U.S. has warned Israel against striking the Natanz, the Iranians read that too. When he reports specific red lines on enrichment, that's a signal to the Supreme Leader's office about what the U.S. considers unacceptable. These leaks function as a de facto diplomatic channel with plausible deniability.
Plausible deniability being the operative phrase. The administration can always say it was an unauthorized leak.
Which is the whole point of the structure. Let me give you a concrete example. March 2026. Ravid reports that the U.S. warned Israel against assassinating a specific IRGC Quds Force commander in Damascus. Fears of escalation during the Nowruz holiday. The detail about the holiday timing, that's not something you get from a general source. That comes from someone who knew the internal diplomatic calculus, who understood that the administration was weighing cultural and religious sensitivities in its escalation management.
That's the kind of detail that screams deliberate placement.
It really does. And compare this to the November 2025 leak. Ravid reported that the U.S. had shared real-time IRGC troop movement intelligence with Israel. That's classified information. The specificity suggested direct authorization at a very high level. You don't leak real-time intelligence sharing casually.
Okay, so let's address the counter-argument. The obvious pushback is, this is just excellent journalism. Ravid has sources in both governments. He's been doing this for 20 years. The pattern reflects his access, not White House strategy. What do we make of that?
I think it's partly true and partly insufficient. Yes, Ravid is an exceptional journalist with deep sources. But the consistency and selectivity of what gets leaked argue against the purely journalistic explanation. These aren't random scoops. They cluster around specific moments when the White House needs to signal something. Restraint, resolve, red lines, internal division. The timing is too consistent to be accidental.
The content is too specific to be unauthorized. If someone was leaking against the administration's wishes on these topics, we'd see internal investigations, source hunts, the usual machinery. We don't.
There's another dimension here that most coverage misses. Axios positions itself as centrist and non-ideological. That's deliberate. It makes the outlet a more credible conduit for bipartisan foreign policy signaling. If the administration leaks to a left-leaning outlet, half the country dismisses it. If it leaks to a right-leaning outlet, the other half does. Axios's studied neutrality, whatever you think of it substantively, makes it an ideal vehicle for messages that are supposed to transcend partisan interpretation.
The Switzerland of news outlets.
The newsletter equivalent of beige wallpaper. And I mean that as a structural observation, not a criticism. The neutrality is the product.
Let's talk about what this does to the traditional diplomatic press corps. If you're the New York Times Jerusalem Bureau chief or the Washington Post diplomatic correspondent, what does it feel like to watch the White House route its most sensitive signals through a competitor?
It's got to be infuriating. And it creates what I'd call a two-tier information system. There are the people who read Axios, they know what the U.S. actually thinks, and there are the people who rely on official statements and traditional press conferences. They get the sanitized version. The gap between those two tiers is real and growing.
This isn't entirely new, right? During the Obama administration, key details about the Iran deal negotiations were leaked to David Ignatius at the Post and David Sanger at the Times. The mechanism existed. What's changed is the medium and the audience targeting.
That's the right comparison. Ignatius and Sanger played similar roles during the 2015 negotiations, but their reporting reached a broad, general audience. The Axios Ravid channel is more surgical. The distribution model, newsletter first, social media optimized, immediate Hebrew syndication, means the message hits specific audiences in a specific order, DC elites first, then Israeli elites, then the broader public. It's a cascade designed for maximum impact on decision makers.
The cascade architecture. That's what makes this different from just being a well-sourced reporter at a traditional paper.
Let me walk through another example that illustrates the strategic dimension. April 2024, the night of the Iranian drone and missile attack on Israel. The White House holds an internal debate about whether to support Israeli retaliation. The debate is tense. There are real disagreements. Hours after it concludes, Ravid publishes the exact parameters of the U.S. position: limited targets, no nuclear sites, no escalation. The leak essentially locked in the U.S. position before Israel could lobby to change it. By making it public, the administration constrained Israeli options.
The leak wasn't just about informing the public. It was about shaping the decision space.
It was an instrument of policy, and that's where the coordination theory becomes hard to dismiss. If this were just good journalism, Ravid would also be publishing scoops that embarrass the administration, that reveal internal dysfunction, that undermine White House objectives. But look at the pattern. The leaks consistently serve White House strategic goals. They signal restraint to Iran. They signal resolve to Israel. They manage expectations. They pre-commit the administration to positions it wants to be held to.
The absence of hostile scoops is itself evidence.
It's a dog that didn't bark situation. In any normal journalist-source relationship, the journalist publishes things the source doesn't want published sometimes. That's how you maintain credibility. The near-total alignment between Ravid's exclusives and White House interests over a 3-year period is statistically improbable as a random outcome.
Let me push on one thing. You said Axios positions itself as centrist, but there's a real question about whether that centrism is genuine, or whether it's a branding exercise that makes the coordination more effective. The medium is part of the message here.
I think it's both. The centrism is genuine in the sense that Axios doesn't have an obvious ideological axe to grind on foreign policy. But it's also strategic. The neutrality makes the channel more valuable to whoever is in power. A Trump administration can use it as easily as a Biden administration. The channel outlasts any single presidency.
Which brings us to the current moment. It's June 2026. Trump is back in office, and the pattern has continued. That suggests this isn't about any particular administration's press strategy. It's about a structural relationship that serves whoever holds the White House.
That's what makes this so significant. The Axios Ravid channel has become institutionalized. It's part of how the U.S. government communicates about the Iran-Israel conflict. Future administrations may adjust it, but the infrastructure is built.
Let's talk about what this means for the Israeli public. You mentioned the syndication cascade earlier. Walk me through how an average Israeli encounters a Ravid scoop.
Ravid publishes in English on Axios, typically early morning Washington time. That's afternoon in Israel. Within an hour, Yenet has a Hebrew summary. Haaretz follows with analysis. Israel Hayom, which is more aligned with Netanyahu, often runs a skeptical framing, but they still have to cover it because it's Axios and it's Ravid. By the evening news broadcasts, it's part of the national conversation. The Israeli public has received the U.S. position directly, without the Prime Minister's office spin machine having had time to shape the narrative.
Netanyahu's government can't really complain about it without drawing more attention to the content.
It's a trap. If they attack Ravid, they're attacking an Israeli journalist with deep credibility. If they attack Axios, they're attacking an American outlet that positions itself as neutral. If they ignore it, the information spreads unchallenged. The White House has created a communication channel that is very hard for the Israeli government to disrupt.
The jiu-jitsu of it is elegant.
It really is. And it points to a broader shift in how diplomatic signaling works. The old model was private diplomatic channel, then public statement, then press conference, then media coverage. The new model collapses those layers. The leak is the diplomatic channel, the public statement, and the media coverage all at once. It's faster, it's more deniable, and it reaches audiences that traditional diplomacy misses.
The compression of diplomatic time.
Which has real consequences. When a decision that used to take days of private negotiation gets compressed into hours of public signaling, the margin for error shrinks. Misread a leak, and you could have an escalation spiral before anyone has time to clarify.
Is there evidence that Iran reads these signals?
Yes, and this is one of the most interesting dimensions. Iranian state media regularly cites Axios reporting on U.S.-Israel dynamics, often to portray the U.S. as restraining Israel, which serves Tehran's narrative that Israel is the aggressor and the U.S. is managing a client state. The Iranians are sophisticated consumers of American media. They understand the difference between an official statement and a deliberate leak, and they calibrate their responses accordingly.
The same leak that tells the Israeli public the U.S. is restraining Israel also tells Tehran the U.S. is restraining Israel. Two audiences, one message, different implications.
Three audiences, actually. Don't forget the European allies. When Ravid reports U.S. red lines on Iranian enrichment, that's also a signal to London, Paris, and Berlin about where Washington stands. It helps coordinate the Allied position without formal diplomatic demarches that might leak in less controlled ways.
The efficiency of it is almost startling. One leak, multiple audiences, each reading it through their own lens, all getting the message the White House wants them to get.
That's why I think the coordination theory is more compelling than the good journalism explanation. It's not that Ravid isn't a good journalist, he clearly is. It's that the pattern of leaks is too strategically coherent to be the product of normal source-reporter relationships. Someone in the White House is thinking systematically about what to leak, when to leak it, and through which channel.
The question of who? Is this directed from the National Security Advisor's office? From the Chief of Staff? From the President himself?
We don't know with certainty, and that's part of the design. But the level of detail in the leaks, the Nauru's timing, the specific enrichment percentages, the real-time intelligence sharing suggests authorization at the NSC level or higher. A press secretary doesn't have access to that kind of operational detail. This is coming from the people in the room when decisions are made.
Which makes Ravid essentially an honorary member of the national security apparatus. An unusual position for a journalist.
It's unprecedented in its consistency. Individual journalists have played similar roles before, the Ignatius and Sanger examples we mentioned, Bob Woodward during various administrations. But the sustained, systematic nature of the Axios Ravid channel over multiple years and multiple administrations is new.
Let me ask the uncomfortable question. Is this good? For democracy? For transparency? For the public's right to know?
It's complicated. On one hand, these leaks inform the public about policies that could lead to war. That's valuable. On the other hand, the public is getting a curated version of reality, the version the White House wants them to get, through a channel the White House controls. That's not journalism in the traditional watchdog sense. It's something closer to strategic communication.
The public thinks it's getting inside information. It's actually getting targeted messaging.
The distinction matters. If you're an Israeli citizen trying to understand whether the U.S. will support military action against Iran, you need to know whether what you're reading is independent reporting or White House signaling. The answer affects how you evaluate the information.
Which brings us to the practical question. For someone following this conflict, how should they read a Ravid scoop?
First, pay attention to the timing. If it drops hours after a White House meeting or just before a diplomatic deadline, it's probably a signal. Second, look at the specificity. Vague sourcing, a U.S. official, an administration source, combined with extremely specific operational details usually means authorized placement. Third, watch what happens next. If the administration doesn't deny it, doesn't investigate the leak, doesn't seem bothered, that tells you everything.
The non-denial denial is the signature of this whole arrangement.
The White House has never seriously pushed back on a Ravid scoop about Iran-Israel. Not once in 3 years. That's not an oversight.
Let me tie this back to the theory Daniel's source proposed, that this is about reaching Israeli and Jewish audiences without the Netanyahu filter. I think that's right, but I think it's broader than that. It's about reaching anyone the White House needs to reach. Israeli elites, the Iranian regime, European allies, the DC foreign policy establishment, through a single, efficient, deniable channel. The Netanyahu bypass is one function among several.
And the Netanyahu bypass may actually be the most important function right now. The relationship between the Trump administration and the Netanyahu government has been complicated, supportive on substance, but with real tensions about strategy and timing. The White House needs a way to communicate directly with the Israeli public when it disagrees with Netanyahu's framing. Ravid provides that.
It's the diplomatic equivalent of going over someone's head.
Which is exactly what it is. And it works because Ravid has credibility with Israeli audiences that an American official speaking on camera would not. He's one of them. He speaks the language, understands the context, knows which details will resonate. The White House couldn't design a better messenger if it tried.
Do we know anything about Ravid's own views on this arrangement? Has he ever addressed the coordination question?
He's been asked about it in interviews, and he gives the standard journalist answer. He has good sources, he protects them, he reports what he can verify, which is true as far as it goes. But it doesn't explain the pattern. A journalist can have good sources and still produce reporting that serves a strategic function. The two things aren't mutually exclusive.
In fact, the best sources often come with strategic strings attached. That's the bargain.
Every journalist in Washington understands this bargain. You get access in exchange for being a reliable conduit. The question is, where you draw the line. Ravid seems to have drawn it in a place that makes him extraordinarily useful to the White House while maintaining enough independence to preserve his credibility.
The balancing act.
Which he's been doing for years now without a major misstep. That takes skill.
Let's talk about what this means for the future. If the Iran-Israel conflict continues to escalate, and as of June 2026, it shows no signs of de-escalating, the information battlefield becomes as important as the kinetic one. The Axios Ravid channel is now part of the infrastructure of this conflict.
It's infrastructure that will outlast any single administration. A future president, Democratic or Republican, will inherit this channel. They may use it differently, but the machinery exists. The White House has built a tool.
The question is whether the tool gets used responsibly. The same channel that signals restraint and prevents escalation could be used to signal aggression and provoke it. The mechanics are neutral. The content is not.
That's the right concern. Right now, the channel has mostly been used to manage escalation, to signal red lines, to communicate restraint, to prevent miscalculation. But there's nothing structural that prevents it from being used for the opposite purpose. A different administration with different objectives could use the same machinery to prepare the public for war, to signal impending strikes, to shape the information environment before a conflict.
The channel is a form of power, and like any form of power, it matters who wields it and for what purpose.
Which is why media literacy around this specific channel is so important. When you see a Ravid scoop about Iran-Israel, you should be asking, what is the White House trying to accomplish here? Who is the intended audience? What's the strategic context? The story itself is only part of what's being communicated.
The medium is the message, McLuhan's old line. But here it's more specific. The channel is the signal.
The channel tells you as much as the content. If the White House wanted to communicate something purely for domestic consumption, it would use a different outlet. The choice of Axios, the choice of Ravid, is itself information about who the message is for.
For our listeners who follow this conflict, and given the stakes, that should be everyone. What's the practical takeaway?
Track Ravid's Axios feed as a leading indicator. It's more reliable than State Department briefings for understanding actual U.S. policy. But read it critically. Ask the questions we've been asking. Why this detail? Why this timing? Why this channel? The answers will tell you more than the headline.
Pay attention to what doesn't get leaked. The silences are as informative as the disclosures. If Ravid isn't reporting on a particular dimension of U.S.-Israel-Iran dynamics, that may be because the White House doesn't want that dimension discussed publicly.
The dog that didn't bark, again. It's a principle that applies across intelligence analysis and media criticism. Absence of reporting on a known sensitive topic is itself a data point.
Let me pull us back to the bigger picture. What we're describing is a transformation in how diplomatic signaling works. The old channels, formal demarches, official statements, press conferences haven't disappeared. But they've been supplemented and in some cases supplanted by a new channel that's faster, more targeted, and more deniable. The Axios. Ravid relationship is the most developed example of this transformation, but it's not the only one.
No, and we're seeing similar dynamics in other policy areas. The Treasury Department leaks sanctions details through specific reporters. The Pentagon uses defense correspondents to signal red lines to Beijing. The pattern is broader than Iran-Israel. But the Iran-Israel case is the most mature and systematic.
Because the stakes are highest.
Because the audience is most fragmented. You need to reach Tel Aviv, Tehran, London, Paris, and Washington simultaneously, with each audience taking away a slightly different message from the same text. That's an extraordinarily difficult communication challenge. The Axios Ravid channel solves it elegantly.
Elegantly, and somewhat troublingly, if you care about democratic transparency. The public is getting strategically curated information from a source that looks like independent journalism. Most readers don't have the media literacy to distinguish between a Ravid scoop and traditional reporting. They just see Axios, they see an exclusive, and they assume it's journalism.
That's the tension at the heart of this. The arrangement works because Ravid maintains enough journalistic credibility to be trusted by readers. If he were seen as a pure White House stenographer, the channel would lose its value. So there's a careful calibration, enough independence to preserve credibility, enough cooperation to preserve access, which he's walked successfully for years. But it's worth asking whether this model is sustainable. Eventually, the pattern becomes too obvious to ignore. Eventually, readers start to notice that every major U.S. policy shift on Iran, Israel appears first in the same place with the same byline. At some point, the credibility cost may exceed the access benefit.
We may be approaching that point now. The fact that we're doing a whole episode on this suggests the pattern is visible to anyone paying attention.
Yet the channel continues to function. The White House clearly still finds it useful. Ravid clearly still has access. The incentives haven't changed.
Which tells you something about how valuable the channel is to both sides. The White House gets a precision instrument for diplomatic signaling. Ravid gets the biggest scoops in foreign policy journalism. Neither party has a strong incentive to disrupt the arrangement.
The symbiosis is stable.
Let me offer one more layer. There's a generational dimension to this. The old guard of diplomatic correspondents, the Ignatiuses and Zangers, came up through newspapers. Their institutional homes had print deadlines, editorial boards, layers of editing. Axios is digital native. The newsletter format rewards speed and shareability. The editorial process is lighter. The feedback loop opens, clicks, shares, is instant. All of this makes it a more responsive instrument for strategic communication.
The old model was built for reflection. The new model is built for velocity. When you need to signal something before a military decision gets made, velocity matters more than reflection.
The compression of diplomatic time. Again, a scoop published at 9 a.m. Washington time is being discussed in Tel Aviv by 3 p.m. By the next morning, it shaped the decision environment. The old model might have taken days.
In a conflict where decisions are being made in hours, not days, that compression is decisive. The White House has essentially built a real-time signaling capability that operates through a journalistic channel. It's faster than diplomacy, more credible than propaganda, and more deniable than an official statement. And once you've built something that effective, you don't give it up. Future administrations will inherit this tool and adapt it to their own purposes. The channel will evolve, but the infrastructure will persist.
To answer the prompt directly, yes, I think the coordination theory holds up. The pattern is too consistent, the timing too strategic, the content too specific to be explained by normal sourcing. The White House has cultivated a structured relationship with Axios and Barak Ravid that serves as a back channel to Israeli audiences, to Tehran, to European allies, and to the DC foreign policy establishment. The Netanyahu bypass is a major function, but not the only one, and the implications for how we consume foreign policy news are significant.
I'd add that this is not a conspiracy, it's an adaptation. The information environment changed. The White House changed with it. Axios built a platform that rewards exactly this kind of exclusive, targeted journalism. Ravid positioned himself at the intersection of two governments that both need to communicate with each other and with their publics. The pieces fit together because the incentives aligned.
The structural explanation is always more compelling than the conspiratorial one.
In this case, the structure is fascinating, a digital native outlet with no paywall and a newsletter, first distribution model. A bilingual, bicultural reporter with sources in both governments. An administration that needs to signal to multiple audiences simultaneously. A foreign government that tightly controls its own narrative. Put those pieces together, and the Axios Revit channel is almost overdetermined.
Almost as if it were designed.
Some designs emerge, some are built. This one is a bit of both. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In 1937, a Soviet radio astronomer stationed on the Kamchatka Peninsula recorded the largest continuous radio burst ever observed from the sun. A solar flare so powerful it overwhelmed receivers as far away as Leningrad and produced a signal that, if converted to sound, would have been louder than a jet engine at close range.
Quite a fact, Hilbert.
Louder than a jet engine, from the sun, through a 1930s radio receiver.
Here's the open question we're left with. As the Iran-Israel conflict continues to evolve, and as the Trump administration navigates its second term, does this channel remain stable? Or does the Netanyahu government eventually find a way to disrupt it, to reassert control over how Israeli audiences receive U.S. policy signals? The White House has built a tool that bypasses a foreign government's information control. That's a remarkable thing. It's also the kind of thing that governments tend to notice and try to counter.
The broader question. As media fragmentation continues, as more outlets adopt the Axios model, do we see more of these structured relationships between governments and specific reporters? Is this the future of diplomatic signaling? Or is the Ravid channel a unique case that can't be replicated? I suspect we'll find out sooner than we'd like.
If you found this exploration of media state dynamics interesting, we've got an upcoming episode on how intelligence agencies use social media platforms for covert influence operations. It's a natural extension of everything we've discussed today. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for making this show possible.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Find us at myweirdprompts.com and on Spotify.
Until next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore. A thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.